Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, what's going on in Brazil? Very confusing reports out of there and seems to be an unfortunate outcome. And Chadwick Moore, as we talk about the diversity, equity, inclusion machine. As always, you can email me freedom@charliekirk.com and support our program at charliekirk.com/support. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Turning Point USA is the flagship for freedom. TPUSA.com. Come to America Fest, AMFEST, December 17, 18, 19, and 20, AMFEST. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here. Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. Brazil is making some international headlines for now unfortunately displacing the great leader Jair Bolsonaro. So look, in Brazil, they have an interesting system. They have a straight popular vote system. And if Brazil had an electoral college, Bolsonaro would have won. So I know very little about Brazil politics. I know probably more than an average American, but I'm far from an expert on it. But there's different regions, and Bolsonaro won every single region except what is in Portuguese called the Nordeste region, of which I don't know where that is. I'm guessing that is the most populated area of the country. And so, or yeah, if it's northeast, then I don't know what, yeah, I guess that would be, I don't know what, I guess that's the population center. I can't imagine Rio de Janeiro's in the northeastern part of the country as per they describe it. Okay, it's not, but he won it in a big way, I guess. So if you look at the percentages though, if you win 70-30 in that one portion of the country, then you are able to basically run the table. It's basically like just winning California 75-25 and then you become president. You see, the Electoral College is a Republican idea, not a Republican Party idea, but a small r republic idea. The American founders were extremely wise. The Constitution spreads power across branches of government, but it also spreads over geography and time. This is what makes a republic different than a democracy. I have been on the record, and I'll say it again, democracy is a bad idea. We are not a democracy. Democracy is unsustainable. They always say, our democracy, our democracy, our democracy. We're not a democracy, and we never should be a democracy. Democracies fold very quickly. In fact, you can go back to numerous citations of ancient wisdom about the warnings of democracy. Look, it's very difficult to take over the American political system on a whim or a passing political moment. Think about Floydapalooza during the summer of 2020. You need to convince voters in different states with different backgrounds, demographics, needs, jobs, economic concerns to work in harmony together. This system has worked very well to preserve our freedom and liberty. You see, a republic is designed to pursue liberty, which is the pursuit of virtue. To protect liberty, which is the pursuit of virtue. That's what a republic is good at. A democracy is good at giving away a lot of free stuff and then giving you a tyrant. You see, the leftist media and the academics, they go nuts anytime you attack democracy. But I ask them, I say, have you guys read in great detail what Plato tried to warn us about when it came to democracy? Dictatorships naturally arise out of democracies. And you're going to see that happening in Brazil with this left-wing leader. The Electoral College is one of the mechanisms which helps spread power over geography. It protects the country from sectionalism. It protects the country from the urban masses. A political movement that dominates in just one area can force its will on an entire country. The Electoral College necessitates balance. And so now Brazil is going to have this far left-wing Marxist take power. So look, Bolsonaro was and is a nationalist. He was a great president. He did a really good job in Brazil. Bolsonaro was very popular, except in one region where Lula ran up the score. And Lula is a very left-wing candidate. He's going to open up the prisons and make Brazil even more dangerous. But thankfully, we're not a democracy. They say Brazil is a democracy. Now, I would love for anyone to come on this program and show me a prosperous, safe democracy right now in America. They say, oh, France, Germany. You think Germany is a prosperous country? They might be temporarily rich, but it's just a matter of time. And by the way, Germany does not respect freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of religious conscience. They don't at all. Why would they? They're not a republic. They're a democracy. It's about whoever gets the most amount of stuff. You see, democracy has a common vice. The common vice is the disregard for morality. Remember, Aristotle warned that tolerance and apathy are the last two quote-unquote virtues of a dying society. Plato warned extensively about the downfall and the destruction of what democracy could mean. You see, we've been led to believe in more ways than one that somehow democracy is an ideal. It's not. Representative government is, of course it is. Constitutional government is. By the way, if you just look at the election results in Brazil, 5.7 million people that cast a ballot had their ballots invalidated. 5.7 million people. As Lula beat Bolsonaro by just about 2 million votes. Makes you think. It is the tightest presidential election in Brazilian history. President Bolsonaro has remained out of public view. And the Superior Electoral Court in Brazil has now declared Lula the winner of the second and final round of voting. It means a lot for the future of the Western world. You can make an argument whether or not Brazil is in the Western world. I would argue that Brazil is in the Western world. But if Brazil had an electoral college, it would look a lot different. Now we have people that are saying, well, we have to trust the elections in Brazil. Oh, really? We must trust the South American elections now? Okay. Now, they just want the results that they like. You see, here's how you know you're living in a democracy, also known as a declining society. If tolerance becomes a chief characteristic. Again, tolerance is the last virtue, in quotes, of a dying society. And who is celebrating this win of Lula in Brazil? China, gangs, drug traffickers. It's the same blueprint they're going to try to put forward here in America. And by the way, Donald Trump never would have won if we did not have an electoral college. Praise God we have an electoral college. That's why we have a Republican style of government, small r Republican style of government. That's why these midterms matter so much. Brazil is going to descend into the third world. It is going to cripple, fall apart. It's already very dangerous. And there's already video after video of Brazilian shootings, crooks, thieves, carjackings. And Brazil is already a very dangerous country. It's going to become an even more dangerous country. Now, I don't claim to know all the intricacies of this election. There's been a lot of claims against Bolsonaro, corruption and all that, but here's what I know. Bolsonaro loved Brazil, expanded gun rights, and tried his best to turn Brazil into a great country. And if you ask any Brazilian, they'll tell you that the government is extraordinarily corrupt and that half the time they don't really know who's actually running the country. Gangs, the government, they're very cynical. And by the way, that's the way America is heading right now. Look, I love fall food, football, fall recipes, church gatherings, Thanksgiving, and of course, Christmas is around the corner. The food is amazing. The problem is there's no room sometimes for fruits or veggies. It's a serious problem. And as you know, you need to get your nutrition. Seriously, if I had to choose between steamed cabbage or a beautiful juicy burger, I mean, come on, I'm going to pick the burger. Well, look, I've got a secret weapon for you to be able to get your fruits and vegetables. It happens quickly. It's amazing. And I still have room for 31, that's right, 31 whole fruits and veggies because I get them all from Balance and Nature. Now, I'm not suggesting you eat with reckless abandon. What I'm recommending is that you make sure you don't deprive your body of what it truly needs, the maximum nutrition found in Balance of Nature fruits and veggies in a capsule. I want you to experience the Balance of Nature difference for a limited time. All new and preferred customers receive an additional 35% discount, free shipping on your Balance of Nature order, and use discount code CHARLIE. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com. Use discount code CHARLIE. That is balanceofnature.com. You guys get all your fruits and veggies. These capsules are great. They're easy to take. Balanceofnature.com, discount code CHARLIE. That is balanceofnature.com, discount code CHARLIE. I have the capsules right near me. You guys will love it. Balanceofnature.com, discount code CHARLIE. Let's go to cut 15. Mendy Hassan, whoever this person is, asking, could the Biden regime have done more to prevent or slow down the Musk purchase of Twitter? Play cut 15.
Julian, I have to ask, could the Biden administration, could Democrats in Congress have said or done anything to prevent or even slow down this Musk purchase of Twitter? I feel like if George Soros had been buying Twitter, the right would have made far more noise and expressed more outrage. Dems just let it happen as if it's fine for Twitter to become yet another platform for misinformation and hate.
Wait a second. Hold on. So Soros does buy a bunch of stuff and we don't do anything about it. Bill Gates does buy a bunch of farmland and we do nothing about it. Bezos does buy the Washington Post and we do nothing about it. Laureen Powell Jobs did buy the Atlantic and we do nothing about it. No, Mendy Hassan, one of the reasons why the left is so, let's just say, discombobulated about this is they thought Elon was one of them. A couple years ago, they thought Elon was a loyal member of Team Left. He's the solar panel guy. He's the electric car guy. You see, there's a very interesting tension here, which is Elon Musk is the monster that has been created by the pagan cult religion of environmentalism. Elon Musk's wealth is made possible thanks to Greta Thunberg and Al Gore. Everybody needs to be in an electric car. And so then he becomes wealthy thanks to that. So they thought they could control Elon Musk. They thought that they could have Elon Musk completely obedient to their wishes. Turns out Elon Musk doesn't play like that. So now Chris Murphy, the very dangerous senator from Connecticut, says, today I'm requesting the Committee on Foreign Investment, which reviews acquisitions of U.S. businesses by foreign buyers, to conduct an investigation into the national security implications of Saudi Arabia's purchase of Twitter. Is it really Saudi Arabia that's buying Twitter? I thought it was Elon Musk buying Twitter. By the way, Saudi Arabia owned some of Twitter before this. They're just mad at Musk, and they're using this as an excuse. And by the way, I'm no fan of Saudi Arabia, but that is just written by the pro-Iranian forces in D.C. That tweet is written by Iran just to try to slow down Saudi Arabia. They're going to throw everything they possibly can at Elon Musk. Everything. I have said before, and I'll say it again, that Elon Musk's purchase of Twitter is by far the most consequential single private purchase in American history. If you can find another private purchase that comes close to it of a private actor buying a private asset, then please correct me, freedom@charliekirk.com. Please. Oh, by the way, on Twitter, our engagement is way up. People are seeing our tweets for the first time ever. We're already seeing a massive benefit from this. And for years, I was kind of known as the Twitter guy. It's kind of nice to be back after a couple of years in complete and total. We were kind of put on, you could say we were put in purgatory, but we were kind of put on Alba. We were kind of excommunicated. What's the right word I'm looking for? Exile. We were in exile. That's what I was looking for. They exiled the Charlie Kirk show, and now we're back. And Elon is liberating all of it. You got to wonder, because Elon really doesn't care about money. He lives in people's homes. He sold all of his homes personally. He doesn't really care about that stuff. So what else are they going to threaten him with? It's going to be really interesting. They're going to throw everything they can at Elon Musk. Everything. And we got to defend him, I'm telling you. There's this whole story about the DHS leaks. I haven't had a chance to really dive into it. It's the Department of Homeland Security leaks of what's happening. Starting in 2020, Department of Homeland Security began meeting with Twitter, Facebook, and Wikipedia monthly to coordinate content moderation efforts, which correlates perfectly with in 2020 when they really started to throttle us and they started to censor us and they started to strangle our social media reach on Facebook, on YouTube, on Twitter, and many other platforms. Hey, we actually might stream live on Twitter on election night. That might be fun. We should do that. We will stream live on Getter and also on Twitter. We used to not do that, but Twitter's actually kind of fun now. And we haven't been banned for our tweet that we put up last week. Not yet. Rents are soaring at unprecedented highs. If you're renting or have a friend or family member that is, now is a great time to make the move to homeownership. Look, you got to own. Renting, that's great reset stuff. Andrew Del Rey and Todd Avakian at Sierra Pacific Mortgage have helped so many people make that leap from renting to owning with lots of programs that offer first-time buyers assistance with little to no down payment needed. I encourage you right now to visit my buddies, their website. They're great guys. They're Christians. They're conservatives. They love the Lord. AndrewandTodd.com right now. The thing I love about these guys is it's not about the transaction. They're helping you create a plan to help you reach your goals. Give them a call or go to their website, AndrewandTodd.com. With today's still historically low interest rates, it's easier than you think to become a homeowner. I've relied on them, and producer Andrew has as well. I highly recommend you take action now. And if you know someone paying rent, tell them about Andrew and Todd. Go to AndrewandTodd.com and tell them the Charlie Kirk Show sent you. We're already trending on Twitter, or soon to be, because I insulted democracy. Yes, democracy is a bad idea. It's unsustainable. Just read Plato. When has democracy ever been able to sustain itself? Does that mean I'm against elections? Of course not. I believe in consent to the governed, the will of the people, through an instrument of a constitutional republic. A democracy is mob rule. That's a bad idea. You get a lot of unrest. Democracy will lead to a dictatorship. Every single time, Plato wrote. And so tyranny naturally arises out of democracy, and the most aggravated form of tyranny, and slavery out of the most extreme form of liberty. Okay. Joining us now is a very interesting guest. He says, so you've been sent to diversity training by Chadwick Moore. He's a public speaker, TV commentator. He's the former editor of large of Out and The Advocate and former writer for The New York Times. And he was canceled in 2017 for coming out as a conservative. Chadwick joins us now. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Charlie. Great to be here. How's it going?
Good. I've been a fan from afar for years. Always enjoy your commentary and your courage. So why don't you just tell your story first? You came out as a conservative, as you know, someone who was rather vocal in the gay community. So kind of walk us through that. How open and tolerant and loving was the gay community about your conservative ideas?
Right. Well, I grew up in middle America, came out as gay when I was like 15 years old, had no problems at all in red America, and came out conservative in my early 30s in New York City, where I live, and was immediately canceled, lost all my friends, fired from all my jobs, all of this sort of stuff. The impetus was that was I was, I worked in liberal media. I was editor at large for Out Magazine, The Advocate. I wrote for New York Times, places like that, as you had mentioned. And after the election of Donald Trump, I just had sort of was tired of keeping quiet. I'd always kept my politics to myself. And I kind of hit a breaking point after watching the reaction to Trump's election in 2016 and how most of my colleagues were behaving so unhinged and had become so publicly Trump deranged. So I just wrote a piece in the New York Post basically saying, you know, I don't want people to think that I'm like these other journalists, just because I, you know, work in liberal media, I'm a gay guy in New York, and you know, I believe in freedom of speech. I believe that the leftist media institutions have become a sort of hive mind of Trump derangement and a really destructive form of liberalism and progressivism, and that was, you know, a bridge too far for the tolerant and loving LGBT community and of course the political left, and I was totally canceled, and that was sort of the start in 2017.
So walk us through kind of your own reaction to that, because you know, being part of the gay community, you probably had some impressions that there was kind of an open-mindedness or a live-and-let-live nature. Maybe not. Maybe you knew they were all totalitarians. But how did you process, not all, obviously not all, but the, you know, vast majority, how did you process that? Because, I mean, some of my favorite people to talk to are Dave Rubin and, you know, Rick Grinnell, kind of very similar approaches to this topic. But it must have been like a shock and awe campaign, wasn't it, at that period of time where you get fired or canceled and kind of driven out because you have a heterodox idea?
Yeah, that's exactly right, because I've always been a kind of civil libertarian. You know, nothing really about me has changed. I just sort of realized, you know, I used to vote Democrat. I voted for Obama twice. And I just sort of realized I was standing on the wrong side. And what I'd sort of thought about the right wasn't necessarily true. And the more I was learning about how much the left lies, the more incensed I was becoming. And, you know, I'd go to hang out in, you know, gay bars in my neighborhood or whatever. And I'd always sort of say the same things. I'd have a sort of contrarian perspective as to what most people thought. But until Donald Trump came along, it was mostly fine. People would just kind of shrug it off. And then suddenly I'd be saying the same things I'd always said. And suddenly I was like a racist or a Nazi or what are you, one of these Trump supporters? I'm like, well, I don't know. Maybe I am. Is that what they believe? Because if so, I might be one of them. So it was a little shocking. You know, I always sort of thought of the gay community as, and now I use the word community loosely, but as more of that kind of civil libertarian, a kind of libertine attitude that people would just want to be left alone by not only their neighbors and but by the government to just live their lives as they see fit, as long as you're not harming anyone else. And that has definitely took a radical turn towards authoritarianism, as we see everywhere. And the gay community and their bloated nonprofits like HRC and GLAAD, yes, and all these groups have really they've not only gone way off the rails with this transgender stuff, and now bringing kids into it, which is something I would never thought I would ever see in my lifetime. You know, they've gone completely off the rails. And now most of them, they advocate for censorship. They advocate for really destructive policies. And they're in favor of things that just I always thought went completely against the idea of loving, you know, freedom and liberty and being left alone to live your life as you best see fit. Now it's about it's not about equal rights anymore. It's about revenge. It's about instilling a really gross and destructive idea about gender and sexuality onto American society, taking out the family, the nuclear family, and now, of course, indoctrinating children and bringing them to drag shows and things like this, not to mention all the disgusting stuff with, you know, medically transitioning children and whatnot that is, you know, not only, you know, and most gay people, I would say the majority of gay men especially, think like I do on these issues. They're just too frightened to speak up about it. And they're still too turned off to vote Republican. So they just kind of keep quiet. And they're these sort of zombie Democrat voters. But it's a very small, nasty, unhinged minority of activists that have really turned the face of this community into something nasty and a weapon for the political left.
Yeah, it's not live and let live. It's live and let them rule. The book I want to talk about is So You've Been Sent to Diversity Trading, Smiling Through the DEI Apocalypse. But I do want to ask an interesting question, though, about what you just said before we get into the book, which is there is this now mass movement around getting this stuff into our schools. And we've seen an uptick where now 1 in 4, 1 in 5 of young people are identifying as either trans, bisexual, gay, or lesbian. Now, you as a gay man, do you think that there might actually be a social phenomenon to part of this that's more than just somebody's sexuality? I know that's a very controversial thing to say, but do you think there's a fad aspect to this?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. And you know that if you look at the rates of children who identify as LGBT, it's not LGBT, it's LGBTQ+, the rates are vastly higher in California, for example, than in Ohio. So that sort of tells you there is something political going on here. Another thing is that the Q, and I write about the Q in the book when I explain what these terms mean, no one's quite sure what the Q means in LGBTQ+. They mostly say it's queer. Well, queer isn't a sexuality. It's a fashion statement. It means a la mode. It means, I support this community or something. So when you see these reports, GLAAD is one of these organizations that pushes out these reports saying that like 1 in 5 Gen Z identifies as LGBTQ+. They're namely talking about the Q. They're talking about fashion statements. They're talking about trans trenders, young people on social media who are, you know, confused or want to be cool or want to say, you know, they're part of this community when it's not. It doesn't mean, you know, kids who are same sex attracted or who have legit gender dysphoria. It's fashion. But of course, it works well to pad out the size of the community and to claim that there's some mass movement here. Of course, the truly destructive part of this is, and we see this all the time, is a lot of kids are getting roped into gender ideology and doctors and school staff and some parents are encouraging this. And it's leading to really destructive, permanently damaging things, not just medically to their bodies, but psychologically. And I think that in the coming years, we're going to see a huge backlash against this for kids who are roped into this ideology, brought into it on social media, thinking that it would solve all their problems when in fact it only caused more problems. And we're going to see a big backlash against this. And it's going to be really heartbreaking to hear all these stories. Yeah, a lot of them are already coming out.
It's just terrible. All right. Tell us about your book.
All right. Well, it's called, as you said, So You've Been Sent to Diversity Training. And, you know, I was just I thought, you know, DEI training in the workplace is something that almost everyone has had to go through. And it's a topic that is so ripe for ridicule and mockery, you know, because I like to have fun. I believe that we need to laugh at a lot of these destructive, horrible things in our society. And but no one had written about it. And I thought, you know, this is something that everyone can relate to. I want to learn about this. And namely, I want to talk to just everyday people about their experiences. And so, you know, I talked to guys on oil rigs. I have a whole chapter about policing, talked to NYPD officers, guys in the military, talked to secretaries, people in IT departments, retail floor workers, just about what did you have to go through in DEI training? What is happening here? And, you know, I had got some stories that were, you know, really hilarious and some that were infuriating and kind of learned about this ideology that is really destructive and nasty and does not belong in the workplace whatsoever. And yet it's a staple in most workplaces, especially in large corporations. So, you know, I looked into the history of it. I heard firsthand accounts and then had a lot of fun just sort of describing what this is really about and what you're in store for. Mm-hmm. So I hope people will enjoy reading it.
Where did this come from? When did it start? When did the DEI phenomenon start in corporate America?
So it's interesting. It started, the way we think of it now, started in the civil rights era in the U.S. military. And the U.S. military, initially it was, they were worried about strife between the races within the ranks of the military. So they implemented programs between white and black enlistees and to sort of try to quell what they thought were going to be racial tensions between the two groups. The way they approached it initially was to have what they called these encounter groups, where they put a white military member and a black one together in a room and basically have them say everything they didn't like about the other person's race. And they immediately realized this was causing more strife and more racial animosity. So they cut it out immediately. But academia had been working on this for a while. And in the 1970s, they began developing these diversity and inclusion programs. And in the 70s, you know, women and feminism and got involved with it. In the 80s and 90s, gay people became part of the curriculum. And in the 2010s, it's trans and gender ideology. So the military now, you know, the military is one place where you really especially do not need DEI training. You know, it's mostly a place of great cohesion. You know, if you're in the foxhole, the person next to you's skin color does not exactly matter. But the military's training, and I have a chapter about this in the book, is now under Joe Biden been relegated to what they're calling anti-extremism training. And this happened after his inauguration. There was a stand down across the entire Department of Defense to counter anti-extremism training, white supremacy within the military, mm-hmm. Which is where this kind of stuff takes a really ugly, horrible turn.
Are we missing something with the Paul Pelosi story?
Well, this is a fascinating story, isn't it? I mean, I'm most interested in, you know, now the initial report said there was a third person in the house who opened the door for the police. They said the hammer wielding hippie was in his underwear and possibly Paul was too. For some reason, no security cameras were triggered or security alarms went off. We're not sure why there wasn't enough more security around the Pelosi residence at the time. So things were sounding very suspicious. Paul obviously has a history of substance abuse. He was just arrested for a DUI. So then the gay lover hypothesis came out. And of course, mainstream media was freaking out. You know, they're saying that because the guy had shouted, "Where's Nancy?" according to one police officer, this was an assassination attempt on Nancy Pelosi. Of course, he could have been saying that because he wanted to blackmail the guy. Who knows? Now the media is saying that there were mistakes. There was no third person in the house. The guy wasn't in his underwear. So the story is still unfolding. But what I find interesting is that when he had all these questions about this situation, the media was shutting it down immediately when they had even less information than we did. When the media had the same information about there being a third person and the guy being in his underwear, they swatted around any theories that this was anything but an assassination attempt on Pelosi. The guy seems like he's some kind of deranged, drugged out hippie from Berkeley, who maybe he's like a fallen Bernie bro or something. Still not entirely sure, but it's interesting that they're also trying to, you know, of course, say that political violence only goes in one direction when, of course, we've had assassination attempts on Brett Kavanaugh and others. I do recall, though, remember the Andrew Gillum saga where he was found naked in a hotel room? Yeah, I remember that first came out. The media was saying that with his gay lover. Yeah, I remember the media was saying that was fake, too, when it first came out. So who knows?
Well, look, I mean, at the very least, it's a schizophrenic nudist that has no ideological reason to do this. At the more speculative reading, there's something here because I think it smells. Okay, Chadwick, I want to ask you about your book in particular. One thing, what should people do when they're sent to diversity training? Is it like The Office? Which, by the way, I do not think Michael Scott in The Office Diversity Day, I don't think that episode would be allowed on television today. It was so incredibly politically incorrect. What should you mock it subtly? Should you just grin and bear it? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you're right about that episode, which was a great episode. You know, you're gonna, it's challenging your diversity czar is if you try to do that at your job, 9 times out of 10, you can start the clock on your departure from the company. You know, I wrote about a guy named Casey Peterson at the Sandia National Labs in New Mexico, government-funded nuclear research laboratory. He really blew the lid off a lot of his stuff by exposing what his lab, his federally funded lab, was doing for diversity training. And, you know, he tried to put together his own syllabus. He tried to say, well, let me just host a counter class to what they're teaching. And he experienced nothing but red tape the entire time. And eventually he wasn't allowed to do it. So it's difficult, you know, but I think that what you're going to find is that more people agree that this is all nonsense than don't. You know, there's a silent majority of people who know that this stuff is all guff, but they're too terrified to speak up. So it really depends on your work environment. You know, if it's worth it, really, to try to be a whistleblower.
The last question I have, we only have about a minute remaining. How sustainable do you think this is? Do you think there will be a period of time when this thing just falls apart under the weight of its own insanity?
I'm an optimist, so I have to believe that is the case and that will happen. I hope it is because, you know, we see look at the former Soviet Union. You have something called, when the Berlin Wall fell down, you had all these people realizing that their neighbors were thinking the exact same things that they were at the exact same time. And just the day before, they believed that all their neighbors were party apparatchiks who believed everything that was in the Soviet newspaper, when it turned out that wasn't really the case. So there is a silent majority. We use that term a lot, I believe. And there has to be a reckoning here and a crescendo. And I think it's just going to take people standing up and realizing that none of this stuff makes sense. And it's childlike and infantilizing to try to tell adults that the golden rule doesn't apply to them, which is simply just treat others as you'd like to be treated.
There you go. That's well said. Chadwick Moore, check out his book, So You've Been Sent to Diversity Training. I bet it's a fun, fun read. Thanks, Chadwick.
Thanks, Charlie. My pleasure.
I mean, let me just say one thing. I meant to say this to Chadwick on air. I wish there were more people in the gay community that spoke against the grooming and the targeting of our children. It's very important. I know there's that Gays Against Groomers group, but we need more. I think that's very important. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.